But first to Ian Dunt. Ian, I don't know where we start with this amazing story, but I'm sure you will.
Well, it starts really with the withdrawal agreement that Britain signed with the EU. Now, you might remember a few months before Boris Johnson signed this withdrawal agreement, he said, look, there's no way any British Prime Minister would ever accept putting, you know, carving up UK territory so that there'd be a customs border between Britain and Northern Ireland. So in other words, in the Irish Sea. And then he signed a deal that did exactly that. And now, 11 months later, 11 months after insisting over and over again, there's plenty of video footage, you can see it if you like, apparently it doesn't matter. You know, he can say one thing that is the opposite of another as much as he likes without consequence. It turns out that in fact, yes, it does put a border in the Irish Sea. It does carve up the UK's territorial integrity. So suddenly, the Prime Minister has done a complete reversal of his previous position. The deal that he said was so wonderful and won an election on the back of passing, incredibly, he now says is a disaster. It's full of ambiguities. It was done too quickly. And he now needs to pass a piece of legislation called the Internal Markets Bill, which is the most staggering, it is, simply put, without hyperbole, it is the most staggering piece of legislation I've ever seen a British government try to pass. Because what it says in sections 42, 43, and 45 of part 5 is we are going to put the British government above international and domestic law so that any policy it passes, any regulation it passes in the area of the Irish Protocol, which is a section of the withdrawal agreement with the EU, it will take effect notwithstanding international or domestic law. Essentially, it puts the government above the law. And as you can imagine, it turns out that that's rather a controversial proposition.
And I'm right, aren't I? All your ex-prime ministers, who are at least half alive and kicking, have come together to grizzle about it.
Yeah, now some of them are like two-thirds alive and cooking. Yeah, I mean, they're all united as one on this front. And so, yes, absolutely, you know, Theresa May, David Cameron. But really, the most interesting part is John Major and Tony Blair. Because these guys, no matter what their other faults, and there were many, were key figures in the Irish peace process. And what is taking place now is a real threat to the Irish peace process. Because ultimately, look, throughout the whole history of Brexit, there were only ever really three options. You're going to have to put a border somewhere. As soon as you decide we're going to leave the whole sort of economic territory, the trading territory of the EU, you're going to have a customs border somewhere. You're going to have a border for goods, for regulatory checks, for country of origin checks, and for customs checks. Now, you can put that between the Republic of Ireland and the EU, but of course you can't because the Republic of Ireland is in the EU. You can put it between Britain and Northern Ireland, in other words, through the middle of the UK's customs territory, and you can't do that because you get the kind of situation that we're in now. Or you can put it in the middle of the island of Ireland, between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. And if you do that, you get a return of, we assume you get a return of violence, because the entirety of the Northern Irish peace process was based on the idea that goods and people could flow on the island of Ireland freely without any kind of hindrance. Now, right now, the second that you say, right, well, the border we've decided is no longer going to be within UK territory, there's only one other place it can possibly go, which is on the island of Ireland. That is the thing, above and beyond, I think, any of the legal and the sort of moral implications of what they're saying that has really united Tony Blair and John Major.
I note that Dominic Raab, the Foreign Secretary, is in the US as we speak, reassuring Washington over its commitment to the Northern Ireland peace agreement.
Yeah, and he's not going to have a lot of luck. I mean, the mistake that they've made is that they thought that Donald Trump was in charge of everything and would be for a while. And as much as even, you know, the most extreme Brexiter, most of them do sort of think Donald Trump is a bit much, at least they have that much going for them. What they have failed to realise is that he doesn't control Congress. And Congress is not going to support any kind of free trade agreement with Britain when it has just gone about breaking international law in a way that threatens Northern Ireland peace process. So even if, you know, Donald Trump was to win the next election, that problem would remain. And it is starting to become clear to the government now that as much as it might be directing this sort of stuff towards a domestic audience, the international community is watching them and it is coming to conclusions on the basis of what they're seeing.
Talking to Ian Dunt, what about the internal politics? Any sign of rebellion from within the Tory ranks?
There is, but I'm sorry to say that it is an absolutely lukewarm form of rebellion. So it's come from an MP called Bob Neil, and what he's put forward is what he calls a parliamentary lock to say, look, before you're allowed to use these powers, there has to be another vote in Parliament. Now, that doesn't fix the problem. The problem is that the government is passing a piece of legislation that says we no longer have to follow the law, international or domestic law. Essentially, and again, this is without hyperbole, you're essentially turning the UK into a basket case country. You're saying that the UK as a country no longer follows the rule of law. It no longer abides by the treaties which it has only just signed. All his bill, all his amendment really does is say, well, Parliament wants to be consulted again before you do it. But of course, here's the thing. It's not just a problem on principle. I mean, on principle, you should never get to the point where you're allowing this stuff, let alone the context, the exact mechanism you use to enact it. But even in terms of the real political dynamics, that just seems an incredibly weak response. Because if Parliament passes the bill, it essentially says, we accept the principle that the government can break international law. So all that's left then, when it gets its eventual lock on whether these powers are used, is for it to go, well, I think you should be able to do it now, which they invariably will. So, I mean, it's a very weak amendment, and the weakness of the amendment gives you some indication of just how much sort of Tory principles have disintegrated over this period, and you're aware, even on the very basic liberal principles that we see, they're prepared to give way.
Well, let's look at Labour principles across the aisle. Well, Keir Starmer's in isolation, isn't he, after a family member developed possible COVID. Who's standing in for him, and what is Labour's position?
Ed Miliband. Now, Ed Miliband was Labour leader for 5 years when David Cameron was Prime Minister and didn't do a terribly good job of it. He's a bit of a sort of awkward, strange, sort of quite nerdy looking guy. And he had a lot of, there was one photo of him struggling to eat a bacon sandwich, which it sounds absurd, but it did a huge amount of damage to his reputation because he did look, I have to say, tremendously odd trying to do it. However, he is an extremely intelligent, well-judged thinker and very, very good in Parliament. And on Monday evening, he absolutely destroyed the government case. And in one of the best speeches I've seen in the Commons for a very long time, actually, for about a year, which went on for about sort of half an hour and took it apart rationally, step by step, step by step. One of the chief points he made is a very strong one, which is that to sell this piece of legislation, Boris Johnson got up in Commons and said, we have to do this because the EU are threatening a food blockade of Britain. Now, he's completely made this up. It's a massive misrepresentation of a series of sort of agricultural checks that are required on food. But even if that wasn't the case, the bill contains nothing to stop it, even if that was what was happening. And Ed Miliband had a moment where he just stood up and went, look, if there's a clause here that addresses that, I'm telling you, you can stand up right now and tell us which is the clause that addresses this threat that you've just raised. When the Prime Minister was unable to do it, and in fact looked like he wanted to sink into the seat so that it would swallow him, Ed Miliband made a tremendously sort of good bit of oratory, sort of going, look, you're not a details guy, you're not on top of this, you haven't read your bill, and you don't know what you're doing. And it was very strong. Unfortunately, didn't change the results, because ultimately the Tories fell in behind the Prime Minister, supported the bill through its first parliamentary hurdle.
The voice of Ian Dunt, our regular commentator, press gallery member and editor of politics.co.uk.